รกบัดดานบ้านโจดอชนำจอสังกันไปล้ออบอดอบนภูมิ
Have you ever heard the expression, be careful what you wish for? You just might get it. I know a criminal lawyer who says to his clients on the way into court, don't go wishing for justice, you might get it. But any event, you know what I mean. You wish for something, you get it, and it doesn't turn out in the fashion that you imagined it would. It might be that way with UNESCO World Heritage status. We look at something, we think it's fabulous, we're, wow, let's put it on that on the World Heritage Status List. Won't that be great? Maybe not. In Italy, of course, there are buckets of places on that list, and I've seen plenty of them, but there are more in the world I'd like to go and see. And I might be part of the problem. Joining me now to discuss just that is Jo Corst, Associate Professor at the University of Melbourne. She's written an article, Is UNESCO World Heritage Status for Cultural Sites Killing the Things It Loves? Jo Corst, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you, Amanda.
Well, do you really wish for it now, for anything that doesn't have a UNESCO World Heritage status applied to it that you would like to have applied? Do you think it's a good idea, or will it just bring floods of problems?
It's really like a paradox, isn't it, that with the intent to actually protect sites and protect cultures, the opposite seems to be occurring. And it's really challenging, I think, because the whole basis of UNESCO protocols essentially was to protect cultural heritage and, of course, natural heritage. But what has happened is that they appear to be mostly being used now as a marketing device.
Mm.
And we are also experiencing an enormous growth in tourism that is probably beyond everyone's imagination a decade ago even. And with the growth of mass tourism, you're seeing huge numbers of people visit sites around the world that are fragile and need to be looked after and protected. And instead, the opposite is occurring because of the visitation of so many people.
Mm. So could they set up a sort of ticketing device for sites if there was a town like Hoi An, for example, and have a limit and the tourism people might not like it. That'd be for the local people to sort out that sort of issue, but they could clearly charge more then to limit the people going in. But, of course, the other side of that coin is other people will say, hold on, the rich who can travel every year will be able to go. The person who can go overseas once a year won't have the money if the prices go up to see this fabulous thing. Have you got any ideas how to fix this?
Well, I agree. I think that there is a challenge there because there could be an issue where only the wealthy and privileged are able to access certain things. But in fact, I think it does need much more thinking about. And certainly, if you have a ticketing approach, that doesn't necessarily mean that only the wealthy can visit that site, but it does control how many people can visit that site. And mostly tickets for various sites are only going to be around $20, say, equivalent.
Mm.
But the problem is at the moment that sites that have ticketing approaches are not using them to control the numbers. They're using them to
collect revenue.
Exactly. So that's the challenge. And they have to actually make a decision that it's not just about collecting revenue, it's also about controlling the numbers. It is going to be impossible for anyone to visit certain sites unless they do control the numbers. That's the first point. But the second point is, of course, this huge number of people visiting places just makes it impossible for everyone.
Mm.
And the actual site itself becomes something else. It's no longer what it was in the first place. It becomes something entirely
Disneyland.
Different. Exactly.
Mm. Yeah. It's a shame, isn't it? Because it's not just what some people would refer to as the greedy West. I mean, it's the middle and upper income groups all around the world, whether they're from Africa or China. I mean, Chinese tourism is very important to Australia, wanting to see the rest of the world. And, well, am I being unkind if I say to big note themselves, oh, yes, we went to Angkor Wat. Oh, I've seen the temple there. I walked around there. Oh, it was lovely. Yada, yada, yada. When you could say to them, well, why didn't you just get a video?
Yeah. I guess it depends on the approach. I mean, certainly we're all consumed by this individualistic need to tick off all our bucket list and say we've been everywhere, done everything, and, you know, we're incredibly sophisticated and important. I think that is an issue for the whole world and for everyone. I mean, I think in a sense there needs to be an intervention that says, yeah, okay, we all want to visit these places, but if those places are going to be destroyed by the visitation, then that's ridiculous.
Mm.
I mean, in 1963, right back in 1963, they stopped people visiting the Lascaux Caves in France because already the impact of those visitors was causing the paintings to be damaged and significantly destroyed. And the same thing has been observed in Egypt, in the pyramids, that opening up spaces that previously have been closed off or have only had very few people going inside them or visiting them can be irreparably damaged by a whole lot of people turning up and being in that space because they bring with them all sorts of things in the atmosphere that are damaging to the work or whatever's on display.
So what about not listing unless there are protection mechanisms agreed to?
Well, that is what happens already. The measures are agreed to.
Just not implemented.
Well, they may be initially in order to get the listing.
Mm.
But then after a while, they're ignored or they're downgraded or whatever. I mean, there's been big issues with Angkor Wat over the last few years. And, of course, there's the site of Bagan in Myanmar, which UNESCO will not list because of damage that's already happened to that site. They may list it in the future, but at the moment they're not.
Have you been there to Bagan?
Yes, I have. It's just glorious.
I hope someone could find someone, a body, a group of people could come together and figure out a way to protect that for everybody, even if it means other countries, you know, chipping in a bit to help them do whatever they have to do.
I think the issue there was that some of the restoration that's taken place so far is not congruent with what needs to be done. So that's one of the issues as well. You know, it's a complex area, cultural heritage, but it's our heritage, it's everyone's heritage, and we've all got a responsibility in terms of the future and future generations.
Mm, sure. I'm talking with Jo Corst, Associate Professor at the University of Melbourne, about UNESCO World Heritage Sites. Does it do the site any good or is it a real problem? Okay, well, I've got an idea for your next paper on this.
Yep.
What if some places were delisted and you had a new list created? Places that were once beautiful, ruined by the failure of the government to protect it.
Hmm. Yeah,
and make that a list.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very good
idea.
And
you'd be ashamed to be on it.
Yeah.
You'd be terrified. Imagine if we had a listing and the body came and said, we're taking it off because you idiots haven't looked after it properly and we're putting you as first on our list for a hopeless government to protect its World Heritage sites.
Well, the Barrier Reef may be that.
Maybe.
In that case, and that would be a tragedy for us all, I think. Yes.
Think that would work? I like that. I mean, I know it's a bit in your face, but it doesn't appear that the softly stuff's working, does it?
No. Well, I think it's really complicated and it does relate to governments. It's very political. It's about economics and the need for constant growth, expansion, all of those things. There are a lot of levels to it, but I really think all of us have responsibility in this case. We can't just say those people over there that are responsible. We all have to take responsibility and all do something about it.
Clearly, I agree when I say why can't countries chip in a small amount each and help Myanmar with Bagan and do something there. I get that. But they have to be prepared first up to actually do it. It's this idea that the rest of the world that's chipped money in so you can pretend to do something and not do it. That's got dog's hairs on it. No country will come at that.
No.
They have to really do it.
Yeah. Well, in the case of Angkor Wat, various countries have got involved in the preservation of those monuments. But the problem with Angkor Wat, and this is another case in point in many different countries, is that the development around that site has been completely uncontrolled. And it's affecting the water table, it's affecting all sorts of aspects of the infrastructure. Siem Reap is a completely uncontrolled destination in terms of how it's been allowed to develop. And it's really tragic because you've got this extraordinary set of temples, but no one's put their mind into what should happen around that space. And it really influences not just from an aesthetic point of view, obviously, but from a profound point of view in terms of what is going to happen in the future, both to the monuments as well as to the local community.
Mm. It's an interesting question to look ahead, say 100 years, and say, do you expect Bagan to be as it is now? I don't. I would hope all the temples in their varying sizes and shapes can be protected, but I think it's unreasonable to expect everybody who lives around there not to have the benefit of bitumen roads, for example.
Yeah. That's another...
You know, to say, well, you know, we want you as a sort of museum for the rest of us and you can just live in it because that suits us. That doesn't seem, you know, fair crack of the whip to me.
It's another point, actually. It's a really interesting point because there's a community in Indonesia which has been encouraged by the government to sort of stay in situ and not have electricity and not access a whole lot of services that we all take for granted. And it's...
How's that going?
Well, exactly. It's causing a lot of tension in the community because that community is there as seen as a kind of artefact for people to come and visit.
Yeah.
But they're real people living there.
Voyeur tourism.
Yeah.
A lot of people do that. Of course, they go to third world countries and come back and tell you, oh, so sad, they're so poor, you know, but I went there as a tourist. Yeah, good on you. The people who've organised to, first of all, have a list, okay, a UNESCO list. They had the best of intentions, and the people who've put places on have had the best of intentions. No one's intended it to be a big flashing light to the rest of the super rich, upper middle class people around the world. Here, come and ruin this site. That was never anyone's intention.
Not originally, no.
No.
Although there is a lot of competition to get UNESCO acknowledgement and status, and certainly countries compete with each other because obviously it is about economics, and if they get a site, then that guarantees that they're going to get more people coming to visit.
Mm.
So there's a tension there that is quite a problem. And I don't know if you can keep things secret and say, no, we don't actually want to have any recognition of this site. I mean, perhaps you
can. Keep it to ourselves.
Yeah. Because, in fact, to get UNESCO recognition now, you have to jump a lot of hurdles. And so it's not something that just happens automatically. You have to prove that this site is unique. But you'd think of Venice and you think of the masses of people visiting in these huge ships and what's happening because of that. And it's not just Venice, obviously.
I don't know about you, but if someone said to me this oyster was caught fresh this morning in the bay around Venice, I would not be eating. I've seen those ships and there are obvious logistical questions that arise and I would not be.
The other interesting thing that's happening is also there's a lot of pushback now from places. So Barcelona, for instance, is saying we don't want any more tourists. Amsterdam is saying something else. It's saying, well, we want nice tourists in a sense. We want the tourists who come here and appreciate Amsterdam. We don't want the tourists who are just coming here to party.
Mm.
So there are those sort of different dynamics that are occurring around the world. I mean, Dubrovnik, I don't know if you've been there, but it's become completely overwhelmed with tourists coming from the big boats and they sort of dump them there for 3 or 4 hours. The whole place is just kind of crazy and people are taking photos of other people's laundry and so on. The whole thing is bizarre. It's like we're watching you living, basically, in this town. So the elements of voyeurism and tourism and all of that are very, very strange.
It's ugly, very ugly. Anyway, Jo Korst, thanks for joining us. It is true what my grandma said. Be careful what you wish for. You might get it.
Yes, you're right.